back to the Steve Cochran Show.
We continue with the Steve Cochran Show. Do we have an update, Mary, on my first grandchild and her appearance? 5 minutes? 5 minutes, all right. That's a big event. Do we have the red carpet out?
Yeah, we do.
She's doing other morning shows right now.
She's making the circuit, the talk show circuit today.
She's 11 weeks old. I told Ross, don't let her take the car. Kim Fox is here, and nice to meet you in person. Congratulations on all the endorsements.
Thank you very much, sir. It's nice to be here.
And there are commercials on top of commercials on top of commercials. What do you say to the public right out of the gate to say, listen, I'm the right person for this job?
I say that we know that our criminal justice system is broken, and it's going to take someone who has innovative leadership, who has both the personal and professional experience to lead us through these times of crisis. And I'm the person uniquely qualified to do that.
I guess because, you know, in the brief conversation we had at that time, you seem like a really nice person. Why would you want this job? Because honestly, and this is not a shot at Anita Alvarez, the system is such a mess now, you really have to want to take this on.
Absolutely. I mean, I want to take it on because I grew up here. And as I've said before, I grew up in one of the worst neighborhoods here. And one of the things that you cling to when you live in an area that's been impacted by violence and crime and all of those issues is the belief that the system will be fair and just for you. And so to be in a position to have endured the things that I've endured in my personal life and in my professional life, to stand ready at this time of crisis to lead us through this, is something that I'm eagerly looking forward to. I'm still a nice person, but I'm eagerly looking forward to tackling these big issues.
Well, you've lived it, and I think we were talking about this with Steve, too. The campaign commercials are so heartfelt, and it actually shows you, you know, walking the streets and walking through the projects. You've lived there, you've been there, you've done it. How do you bridge the gap between those who don't trust law enforcement, whether it be the police, the prosecutors, whoever, and the establishment?
I think you have to start having difficult conversations that we haven't had in this county in a long time. I think we skirt around the issues when we talk about, you know, poverty and race and our criminal justice system and our educational institutions. And so one of the ways that you do that, particularly with the community, is you meet them where they are and you tell them, listen, I know that our system is in a state of disrepair. Let me hear you. Let's work together to fix it. I think the problem with Anita Alvarez is she's the only person in Cook County who doesn't think that the criminal justice system is in a state of disrepair, which makes her unqualified to fix it.
There are so many, I guess I've used this analogy before, but you know when you take Christmas lights out of a box at Christmas time and you got to untangle them, even though last year you said, no, I'm going to put them away and organize them? That's the way all these interconnections feel to me at times, because if your primary job is convict and incarcerate at a time that we know young black men are incarcerated at a level that is so dramatically higher, and that's helped create this distrust for the police, you know, you've got a legacy with the neighborhood you grew up in, but you've got to do a job that serves everybody. That's a lot of Christmas lights to untangle.
Yeah, but I think what we've done, if I can use your analogy a little further, is we've started trying to just swap out one bulb. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, maybe it's just this bulb instead of doing the work of untangling it.
Sure.
And that's not working. It's not working just trying to do one bulb at a time. I think the reason that our criminal justice system has been so fractured for so long is that we haven't put in the work to do it. I mean, when we talk about the issues that we're facing now with police accountability and the like, we have a long history in this city, in this county, with these issues, and we haven't delved into it. You know, we've got this police torture reparations fund. There's this acknowledgement that these bad things have happened 20, 30, 40 years ago. But we didn't do anything to change the culture, to make it more transparent for everyone, that we've made steps to remedy this. Mm-hmm. So what we've seen in the last couple of months, this heightened angst and insecurity about what are we doing? It's because we haven't started untangling. And I think as a prosecutor, your job is to seek justice. And justice and public safety go hand in hand. But true justice means looking at all the factors that lead people into our criminal justice system, all of them. And crime, violence, and all of the other issues that are at play have to be part of the conversation.
Talking with Kim Fox, she wants to be the state's attorney. You have to be able to go after the bad cops. And by the way, I assume you'd grant this, that just like all kids aren't bad, no matter what color they are, certainly all cops aren't bad. So at a time where there's distrust of the police in the other parts of city government, how do you keep an eye out for those bad cops, yet have the good cops, which is the vast majority of them, trust what you're doing?
Certainly. I mean, I think the vast majority of the good cops want to make sure that the ones who are not doing what they need to do are taken care of. I mean, it doesn't serve the police officers who are running into danger every day. It doesn't serve them well when the public doesn't trust them because the few have tainted the many. And so, I mean, I think we have to work in collaboration. I've said all along, we can't deal with the violence in our communities if we don't have all three legs of the stool working together, the community, the police, and the prosecutor's office. And in order to rebuild that trust, you have to be able to have a good relationship with the police. They have to know that they're supported. And again, I believe that they want those who are doing bad things expelled from their institution so that they can continue to do the good work of serving the public.
Well, and to take that back to where I started, here's the other thing we know. In the poorest neighborhoods in Chicago, and I don't care who lives there, all those families want is the same thing the rest of us want for our kids, and that's to have them have a chance to have a better life than we had and to maximize their opportunities. And you know that better than most because you came from a rough situation.
Absolutely. As I said from the beginning, there's one thing that you want to feel, even if you don't have a lot of money, if you don't have a lot of resources, is that you get a fair shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so the relationship that the people in communities that are impacted by violence that they have with law enforcement or other institutions is really important because it's the one thing that you hold on to, is that at least I'll be treated fairly. At least I'll be respected. When that's fractured, it has a ripple effect on other issues.
Kim, so many of the crimes that we report on, even as recent as Tyshawn Lee's alleged killer found in a different state, so many of those accused are back on the streets. How do you keep offenders, violent offenders, behind bars?
Yeah, I think we have to make sure that we're using our resources and our priorities correct. We have in our jail, we have the largest single site jail in the country. 70% of the people in that jail are there for nonviolent offenses. And 30% are there for the types of crimes that keep us up at night. So if we have a large population of drug addicted folks or people who are dealing with mental health issues, and we're spending all of our resources there, we're not putting the effort in the proportion to the violence that we're seeing. So I think we have to go after violent offenders, repeat violent offenders. I think we have to make sure that we have the data to show, you know, what are the sentences that are being given, you know, what are the offers that are being made in courtrooms, so that we can keep those who harm our communities off the street. And those who belong in our public health institutions, mm-hmm. those who have drug addiction issues or our mental health institutions, they should be out in those institutions so we can have the time and resources to deal with the violence that's plaguing our communities.
And I can't even find my own microphone. How long have I done this? That's a big part of the challenge you're going to face, as much as anything else. With all the horrific things that can potentially happen and all the challenges of the office, you would become state's attorney at a time where there's less resources than ever to do a bigger job than I would argue has ever been asked to be done by the office. How do you balance that?
And again, it's a where are your priorities? We got an issue of violence in this.
Yeah, but I don't want your to-do list. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because your to-do list, they're all important.
So
how do you decide what's the most important? Is it a day-to-day thing?
I don't think so. I mean, I think our priorities are on the safety of our communities. We're on track to have one of the most violent years in the city of Chicago in some time. So keeping our streets safe is important. Tackling gun violence is absolutely important.
Sure.
You do need to rebuild the trust with the community to do that. And so, you know, they go in tandem. But I think also on the issue of nonviolent offenders who are taking up so many of our resources, working in partnership with other stakeholders in the public health sector, in the mental health sector, is important so that they can shift some of the burden, both financial and resource, so that we can deal with the violence. Because if people don't feel safe in their communities, if children don't have the opportunity to go outside and play, that's a reflection on our values here in the county. And so that has to be a priority.
The Tyshawn Lee thing is so disturbing. It's beyond disturbing. And understand the vein in which this is brought up. There used to be rules. Used to be rules in gangs. I'm not going to shoot your mother because I have a mother. I have a grandmother. I'm certainly not going to shoot a kid. How does this animal operate the way he does, and are there more of them out in the street, the guy that's been accused of killing Tyshawn Lee?
I can't even fathom what type of consciousness one would have. To, you know, it was already horrifying enough to learn how this little boy died. It was even more egregious to hear what the original plan was. I don't think you can justify that type of evil. One would
It's soulless. I mean, yeah, you're a dead inside. You're a dead man walking.
That's an evil that is
it's incomprehensible.
I can't.
So is there more of that out there? Because you, in your experience, and certainly your experience running for this office, you talk to cops, you talk to people in the neighborhoods. Is that going to be the prevailing attitude of gangs now?
I certainly hope not. I don't think so. I mean, I it's so egregious. I think it was such a shock to all of our consciousness. It was really at a new low, I think, of what we've seen around crime and violence. And the communities where Tyshawn lived, I don't think that they could stand to have that kind of evil preying on their children. I mean, and the question becomes, what do you do?
Yeah, if you're not going to stand up for, I mean, I'm talking about the communities now.
The community.
If you're not going to stand up over this, when are you going to stand up?
Absolutely.
He was moved out of Cook County Jail. He was moved to a facility in Champaign overnight because of the threats against his life, to which many would say, good. Let it be. But I guess my question to you, Kim, is how do you prevent, not you personally, but how would your, I guess, your team prevent the gangs from operating from within the jail, too?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Again, we have one of the largest single-site jails in the country. Sheriff Dart will tell you his responsibility is to maintain safety within the jail and, you know, make sure people make it to their court dates. But we've got to start dealing with these gang issues on a more holistic level. I mean, we've got kids. The gang culture, you talk about where we are, it's not the same structure that it was 20 years ago. You got four guys getting together. You know, three of us, you know, we're now the Kim Fox posse.
Yeah, the blocks, guys that control blocks as opposed to answering to one source.
Exactly. It's so fragmented and it's getting younger and younger. And so we need to start intervening earlier. You know, we're talking kids as young as 12, 13, 14 who are graduating into gangs. And, you know, they're not in school. They're not involved in any activities. And that matters. And you know, I tell people, when we talk about Tyshawn, can you imagine the 9-year-olds, the other fourth graders who are in that classroom learning what happened? The scary part, though, is that there's someone ready to arm them right now.
Sure.
And those kids, those fourth graders, have a legitimate belief that they need to be armed because one of their classmates was killed in such a horrific fashion. That's what we've got to start working on. How do we deal with the trauma that those kids are dealing with? Because there's a strong likelihood that someone from that classroom may end up arming themselves. That is a strong likelihood. And it's
not a 9, 10, 11-year-old that thinks they have to have a gun to walk to school.
And legitimately, their classmate was executed.
It's just outrageous. It's beyond outrageous. One of the main criticisms of the Anita Alvarez office was a lack of transparency in chasing down bad guys and putting them away. There is what the public deserves to know, and there are things that you cannot share. What's the balance there?
I think, you know, you're the gatekeeper of justice as the state's attorney. And so you have to make sure that, you are transparent without breaching your case. And a lot of these cases, I know that the public has an absolute right to know. But we also want to make sure that we can get and maintain convictions for those who commit crimes. And so there is a delicate balance. I think what we've seen with this state's attorney is stonewalling on everything, that there is no discernment about what you can share versus what you shouldn't share. And I think that lack of transparency, what happened with Laquan McDonald, wasn't simply that it was, you know, that this murder happened. It was the 400 days that intervened. And at the point when a decision should have been made to charge, we still weren't getting information. And the rush to charge only after the video was going to become public, I think created those seeds of doubt in our criminal justice system that Anita Alvarez fanned.
I think Anita Alvarez has come under fire, too, a lot for her relationship with Mayor Emanuel. Relationship or maybe lack thereof. What is your current relationship with the mayor, and what would it be if you were state's attorney?
Certainly. I've known the mayor because I've had to work with him while chief of staff for the president of the county. We had a good working relationship. You know, he's the mayor of the city, which is within our county. And so we had to work together. And I'm glad to say that we've been able to work through some really difficult issues, you know, related to county and city relationships. As the state's attorney, my job is to be the chief prosecutor for the county. And that would mean having, I think, relationships with all of our elected officials, as well as, you know, our community partners. And I certainly would hope that he would respect my role as an independent prosecutor, having to do the things that are necessary to make sure that public safety is maintained and the integrity of the office is maintained.
You brought up your previous relationship with the county board prez, and a lot of people have made this an issue. I brought it up to her, and she was very defensive. But I believe we've worked out that rough bump in the road. In the meantime, how would you describe that to people so that maybe if they have a concern about your relationship to Preckwinkle, they wouldn't have after you tell them why?
Yeah, I would remind people that I have been preparing for this job as the next state's attorney my entire life. That my drive to get into public service and to get into criminal justice and juvenile justice began, you know, over at 624 West Division. So at the point where I got to work for President Preckwinkle, I'd been 15 years in public service. And I think she got a chance to see firsthand my commitment to these issues and my ability to get the job done. And she knew that I was a leader. So her support of me makes sense. And I think her vouching for my credibility as a leader makes sense. But I'm a public servant. I'm here to serve the people of Cook County. And that's an oath that I took as an assistant state's attorney where I worked for 12 years, one of the best jobs that I had. And it's an oath that I'll take again. And you have to put the people first in order to rebuild that trust and credibility. So I would assure people that my interest in this role is only to be a public servant, to make sure that the people of Cook County can have a state's attorney that they believe in.
We live in a world that wants change for change's sake. You know, I've maintained that while the mayor's made a lot of mistakes, blowing up the mayor's office is not the right idea. And maybe it's not the right idea to blow up the state's attorney's office either. You've laid out a nice case here of why you should be the next state's attorney. But there's a lot of people who have endorsed you, a lot of people who have supported you. And as cynical as the public is about politics now, what do you say to folks that go, she got a lot of power brokers in her corner. The first time somebody needs a favor, I don't know. What do you do?
You know, we've got support not just from those who are in elected office. I mean, it's really been across the board from, you know, the GPAC, the Gun Violence Prevention PAC, to the Sierra Club, to the National Association of Social Workers, to, you know, all the major newspapers. I think what that shows, there's a consensus that our criminal justice system is broken. The need for change has never been more evident than it is right now. I'm honored that they believe that the vision that I've explained for the office, my unique qualifications make me ready. The expectation should always be in the way that I've handled myself in my public career, that it is about making sure that those folks who live out in the community know that they're getting a fair shake and that I'm committed to their safety. That's why I got into the work. That's why I made it my life's mission to do this type of work. The support that I've received, the acknowledgement of that work, you know, while it's very complimentary, it is not what the job is.
Nobody gets a favor just because they endorsed you.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Nice to see you. I wish you luck. I know it's a rough slog doing any kind of campaign like this, but the city and the county are certainly invested in this race. In a way, you know, I can't tell you the last time the state's attorney's race had this much light on it, but that's a good thing.
That is a great thing.
So all the best. Thank you for being in. By the way, I want to remind everybody, KimFox.com, FOXX. That's the best place to send people for the website?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
927, Steve Cochran Show continues next, 720 WGN.